so we have some pre-stuff. And then what, is there anything specific you want to talk about? There's things I know I want to talk about.
I don't think so. I'm pretty much, I like to just kind of, for this kind of thing, just kind of roll with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think a spontaneous conversation is better than a planned one. Definitely. So I'm up for talking about whatever. And I'll just follow your lead if that's all right.
Sounds good. Yeah. I wanted to kind of talk about, you had mentioned the top of funnel stuff. And I was thinking that would be interesting to talk about kind of how you had come up with that top of funnel offer and the kind of stuff we talked about a couple of years ago, where you're like saying that you had people coming in for this 14-day funnel that obviously they didn't want to wait 14 days. So that's something I do want to definitely talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been working on that top of funnel. That's gone through, I think, a few iterations mm-hmm. since you and I worked on it. And then I'm actually currently working on lower down in the funnel with Alex Hillman.
Oh, so, excellent.
You know, kind of a lot of the things that you and I talked about a few years ago are still in place. And then I'm kind of going back now with Alex and saying, you know, how can I optimize this basically?
Right. What's next steps? Awesome. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to ring the bell. I'm going to start us in. And then we'll just kind of talk for maybe 30, 40 minutes. And then when we're done, we'll be done.
Okay, cool.
All right. And any way you want me to introduce you?
You could just say, I'm a salary negotiation coach. Here, I'll type in a chat if you want to just read it. I have a little line that I like to use. Perfect.
Amazing that you remember the whole thing.
There you go.
I'm not burning that yet. Do you want me to mention fearless salary negotiation?
You could. My primary positioning is the salary negotiation coach stuff. But the book is also, I think, useful to people who don't want to hire me.
I think also it gives a good, because that's your company name as well, isn't it? Or
yeah. Well, and if we're talking about top of funnel stuff, like that's what we're going to be talking about is the fearless salary negotiation is sort of the baseline for everything on my site and then the stuff that I sell in that top of funnel stuff. Okay. The coaching stuff all kind of goes through a different side of the funnel. Okay.
Sounds good. All right. So I will kick this off. All right.
Yep.
Hey, this is Keith from Segmetrics with Data Beats Opinion. Today we're here with Josh Duty of Fearless Salary Negotiation. Josh is a salary negotiation coach who helps experienced software developers negotiate job offers from big tech companies. He also wrote Fearless Salary Negotiation, of course, a step-by-step guide to getting paid what you're worth. Josh, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So we've talked a lot before, a lot about funnel optimization, and I think you and I both have very similar ideas and strategies about what it takes and what you should be doing in order to optimize a funnel, right? So what are the points that you should be focusing on stuff? And I'd love to talk a little bit about your strategy as you were optimizing your funnel for Fearless Salary Negotiation.
Sure. That sounds like a lot of fun. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start at, let's give a little bit of background. So what is the offer? What kind of thing are you giving people? And what's your funnel look like, I guess, at a top level?
Sure. So I've identified really three different types of things that people are looking for help for with respect to kind of my universe of salary negotiation. And those three things are, I have a job offer right now and I need to negotiate it. Usually that's almost like a panic response. Like people get an offer, they immediately kind of realize, I probably should do something other than just accept this, but I don't know what to do. And so they start looking for help. Then there's people who are currently interviewing and they're kind of looking ahead. And usually they want just help answering interview questions, or they're asked about their salary expectations and current salary history during their interviews. And that kind of clues them in that maybe they're already negotiating or there might be pitfalls they should avoid. And so they look for help with that. And then the third is people who are still at their company, they're pretty happy there, but they feel like they're underpaid and they want to see if they can get a raise. So that's a salary negotiation of a different type from like a new job offer. So that's the sort of general area that I work from. It's kind of how my book is broken down. And those are the three types of people that are usually looking for help that I try to provide them.
And this is something that people, I think if they don't have experience with it, they have no idea about what a base salary is in their area or what they're actually worth. I think, you know, in the US, we have a lot of taboos around discussing salary, and especially with your coworkers and stuff. And it's interesting because people have no idea what they're worth. I've talked to people in companies that working alongside me that were being paid twice as much or half as much as me. And yes. doing the same job.
Yep. That's really common. That's kind of a supporting chapter in my book. So one of the early chapters is how to estimate your market value. And I lay out kind of my process for doing that because I think it is a really important thing to do for all three of those types of people that I described. And usually it's really about just getting, you know, a baseline for your own expectations and what you think is happening. So for example, if you're expecting a job offer, it really helps to have an idea before you get that offer of like, what do I think my market value is, so that you can compare your job offer, not to what you'd like to make or what would feel good to make, but sort of what the data tells you is an approximate range for your offer. Whereas if you're maybe pursuing a raise at your current job, I advocate that you ask for a very specific raise to a specific number to take, you know, work off of your manager's plate to kind of spoon feed them everything they need. And of course, a big part of asking for the right number is understanding what your market value is, you know, in your region or in your industry and in your company. So that's definitely sort of it's an undercurrent to everything that I do, is having some way to baseline and kind of understand your own expectations and to have realistic expectations, but also to have something to start from so that you're not just completely blue skying your process or what you're asking for, what you're hoping for.
Right. And through that process, I assume, does that feed into the marketing funnel at all? Are you using that data about what industries people are in or what areas people are in order to inform that decision through the marketing funnel as well?
A little bit. So I do some surveying on my site. I use a tool called Right Message.
We love Right Message.
You and I both know Brendan Dunn over at Right Message and Shy. And so I use that I don't use it directly right now. So this is probably a gap in my marketing. But I survey people using Right Message just to figure out like, what is the breakdown of the kind of person who hits my site look like? And the reason I'm doing that is really more to inform maybe pricing on products and how I pitch things to people, understanding that, you know, this is the sort of modal person that is hitting my site through my marketing funnel, which I know you and I are going to talk more about, like how they hit my site and all that good stuff. But I use it now as sort of a passive way to understand, you know, if I'm trying to pitch sort of a general pitch, what does it need to look like? Who does it need to address? And I do that by, among other things, collecting data from people on, you know, what their income level is, how many jobs they've had, what industry they're in, that kind of thing.
Interesting. And then able to, I think in the future, funnel that into the marketing. So you're able to build out different campaigns that say, okay, if they're in this industry, send them this. If they're in this income bracket, send them this kind of thing.
Yeah. And what I do with that right now, so I do one sort of, it's almost like a quick and dirty way of doing this, but I use Right Message to do it, which is I ask some questions. The first one is, you know, what brings you here today? What can I help you with? And it basically is segmenting them into those three segments that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And then if they fall into the I need to negotiate a job offer segment, then I ask about income and experience level. And if their income and experience level are aligned with the people that I coach that get the best results, then I'll ask them, are you in tech? And if you're in tech, are you going to one of the big five tech companies and which one? And then I can point them to resources or even just to my coaching offering to say, hey, I think you're a good candidate for this. It might be a good fit for you. Take a look.
Interesting.
So that's the only way that I really use that data to actually segment people in it. And I do segment people that way. So that's the kind of high level of, should you go into my, you know, DIY product funnel or should you go into my coaching premium offering funnel? Right.
And that's something I've seen that performs really well. Now, are you doing that before they opt in or is that as part of like the opt-in process or is that after they've opted in for some sort of lead magnet?
That's before opting in. And so basically what I'll do is if they look like a good coaching candidate, I'll send them to the coaching side of things, which doesn't offer lead magnets. It just offers information and an application button. Or I'll send them over on the other side to the lead magnet funnel, where I'll say, oh, here's a thing that I think might help you with your situation, and kind of get them into that funnel and begin offering them, you know, free material to help them with their situation and to nurture them and hopefully eventually maybe convert them to being a customer.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So let's take that back a little bit. Let's talk about the top level of the funnel. So we've talked about, you do have opt-in magnets, but you are separating people into those coaching and kind of non-coaching clients. What does that kind of look like at the top of the funnel and as they flow through?
Yeah. So this is really interesting because I think you have a lot more experience with this than I do, but you know, there are not infinite, but certainly scores of possible sort of marketing channels that could lead into a funnel, mm-hmm. right? And so you start kind of on the outside with like, where are people even coming from? And then they end up in a funnel. And so for me, what I found, you know, through the first couple of years of my business, I did a lot of experimenting with just different marketing channels, mostly inbound, and trying to figure out like what worked. And what I found was that a couple of things for my particular business revolve around this idea that I call the timing problem, which is for most of the people who find me and need help, they need help now. That's not always true, but for most of the people, more than 50% of the people, they need help now. And so the first thing I did was just experiment with a lot of different channels. And what I found was that the best way to help people is to answer questions that they have. And so, for example, my first kind of big win as a marketing channel was Quora, where I would just go look for questions that people were asking that I thought were useful, and I would put a good answer up there. And by good answer, I mean a really complete good answer to that actual question. And then, oh, by the way, here's an article where you can read more, or mm-hmm. you know, learn more about my book or my brand or whatever. And that was the first time I remember with Quora was where I got one new subscriber a day or more for an entire month. Right. I could see my little graph and I was like, okay, so I'm above zero subscribers a day, every day for a month. And as I kind of zoomed out and thought about that, I thought, well, how do I scale this? Cause I was spending a lot of time answering questions on Quora. I mean, every morning I would get up at like 7:15, I would answer at least one or two questions a day. And I did that for, you know, like a month stretch or something. And what I found was just like everything else, 80-20, some of those would have really big impact, big results, get a lot of traction, a lot of views, a lot of upvotes, a lot of comments. And some of them would just go nowhere. And they all took about the same amount of time to answer. So I said, well, how do I scale this? And what I realized was, well, what's ultimately happening here is people have a problem. They have a question. They type in that question to Quora and ask Quora, and then Quora shows them an answer. And the way that scales already existed, which is Google, right? Mm-hmm. Google is a bigger version of Quora that points at Quora among other things like Stack Overflow or whatever your
right. They're not necessarily even searching on Quora. They're searching on Google, which then takes them to the Quora question.
A lot of times I think that's true. And so I thought, well, there's no way I can spend an hour a day writing answers to Quora questions. I just can't do it. And it is great because it got me traction and it actually helped me to start kind of growing my email list in a meaningful way. But then that's when I realized that SEO was probably a better play for me. This was also aided by our mutual friend, Patrick McKenzie, who he gave me advice in, I think it was 2015, but he said, you need to get more traffic to your site, because he knew I was trying to sell my book and courses. I was early in the business. And what I heard was, you need to get better at SEO. I don't think that's what Patrick meant.
I don't know. Patrick's pretty big into SEO. I think that's probably, that was the undertext of.
I think that's why I interpreted it that way. I think he may have meant like more like, I don't know, like warm inbound, like podcast mm-hmm. tours and guest blog posts and stuff. And I think he probably included SEO there, but I just heard get good at SEO. So I said, I'm going to get good at SEO. So I set a goal of 100,000 visitors a month through SEO. And of course, at the time I was at like 150 or something, like mm-hmm. a negligible amount, right? And I just started cranking. And so that's where I kind of, you know, I had tried many marketing channels. I'm not talking about all those here, but I found that Google search was a way that I could get traction. I like to write, I'm good at teaching. And so content marketing is a natural avenue for me to offer help to people and then also to get them to come when they need the kind of help I offer to find me. And then to basically create a top of funnel for my business.
Right.
And so that's the long way of me saying, so the top of my funnel looks like Google search, ultimately.
So do you mind me asking, how long did it take you to hit your goal from that 2015 conversation to getting the traffic that you were happy with SEO? Because I know SEO is a long play game, which is why a lot of people do Facebook instead, because it's faster.
Facebook is faster, but it's less durable, yeah. In my opinion, and it's a lot more expensive. And I will now asterisk in terms of dollars spent.
Yes.
Obviously, SEO is very time intensive early on. So it took me, I think it was pretty close to 3 years.
Okay.
From the time that I just like said, oh, I need to get more traffic, until I look and said, oh, I had 100,000 visitors this month.
That's amazing.
So it was like early to mid 2018. And then was when I had the 100K. And so you look back and it was like early to mid 2015 when Patrick said that to me. Mm-hmm. And of course that looks like a, you know, it looks like a hockey stick when you zoom out, right? Like it wasn't like a straight line. It was like very slow. And the way that I measured it actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Justin Jackson's Mega Maker Club, mm-hmm. but like yeah. his Mega Maker community, but I was, you know, really early in there. And I would post, like, I decided to do my goals in such a way. So I'd say, well, let's say I'm getting, you know, 100 visitors a week right now. So my first goal was I need to get 1,000 visitors a month, right? Because 100 a week is about 400 a month. And mm-hmm. I was like, so I'll get 1,000 a month, and then I'll try to get 1,000 a week, which is about 4,000 a month. And then I'll mm-hmm. go from, you know, 4,000 or 1,000 a week to
1,000 a day.
Yeah. Well, eventually, and then like 10,000 a month, and then 10,000 a week, and then 100,000 a month. So that's how I did it, was sort of in those logarithmic little increments mm-hmm. there. And it was, you know, it was cool to like crest, you know, do a little strike through in Slack and be like, strike through 1,000 visitors a week, you know? And so that's how I did it. It took about 3 years of sort of, you know, there was some luck involved, but sort of carefully engineering, you know, for this funnel, this is a topic that seems to resonate with them. I'm going to go really deep on this topic and do a good job of getting onto the first page and getting search traffic to it.
Yeah. And I think SEO really becomes a discounted skill, content creation included in that SEO, just getting that search, because, you know, the Facebook, it's really easy to start. All it costs is money. You don't have to be good at creating real, I guess, solid content that Google picks up on. Right? It can be more adsy. It can be more salesy. It doesn't have to be really strong content until you get deeper into the funnel. But I think SEO is really the engine that runs most successful businesses. I think Facebook is great for those spurts, for getting started, but the strategies that you have with just researching those keywords, finding out what converts, and then building that into a strong engine, that SEO, unless Google does something horrible, like, you've got that forever, right?
Yeah.
You built that up and it's going to keep generating leads.
Yeah. And I found that to be true. You know, I haven't really done any meaningful SEO work in probably 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a little bit down right now. Like I'm at like, let's say 85 or 90K organic visitors a month. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it'd be nice to be at 100 even, but whatever. But
yeah, for not touching it in 2 years, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, when's the last time I really did meaningful SEO work? And I honestly can't remember. I mean, it's been months and months, and probably over a year since I did anything, you know, real. And there are some things kind of on my list of to-dos, but there are other things that I think that are higher to generate revenue. So I focus on those. But it's durable. It doesn't cost me money now, so I'm getting a huge ROI. And early on, I know that you know this from your own experience, you know, early on in the business, sometimes you just have to do things that don't scale. You invest a lot of time hoping mm-hmm. to get a payoff down the road. And for me, that was, you know, going really deep on these, you know, 10,000 word articles that are extremely deep and detailed and giving a lot of information that I could then turn into an SEO magnet for Google, and then, you know, further down funnel to get traction there. And then I get to set it and forget it and come back 2 years later and say, yes, I'm still getting tons of traffic to that article. And now I can optimize, you know, further down the funnel for it. Whereas if you're doing Facebook ads, as soon as you turn off the spigot to Facebook, they turn off the spigot to your yeah. site. It just disappears.
And you got no social proof from that. You got no SEO. As soon as you turn off, like you said, it just off. Like
right.
You're not even getting a trickle at that point. Right.
It totally disappears. So I'm happy that I over-indexed kind of early on SEO, and it continues to pay dividends for top of funnel, you know, traffic to my site.
Yeah. I think I told a story before, but I love this story, that we had a client we were working with that had some really well converting SEO pages. And we didn't know that they were SEO. And we were talking to them and says, you know, you're getting like $2 leads off of these pages. Like, this is amazing. How much are you spending to get that? And it's like, nothing. It's all yeah. SEO. And it's like, you mean you're getting $2 leads? Everyone yeah. who opts in for this is worth $2, and you're not paying anything for that? I mean, that's amazing. Like, that's a business right there.
Here's a really interesting thing. I think we're going to talk more about product funnels and things, but the really interesting thing is that once I built up my site to be basically respected by Google, so that pointed people to me, and I kind of decided about 2.5 years ago, I decided I'm going to really focus on coaching as my primary business and then do the product business as sort of my secondary business, or not quite side hustle. It's a little more valuable than that, but you know, it's not my primary focus. The first thing I do is coach, and then I also sell products. But when I decided to do that, I was able to use that SEO machine that I had built to start pointing people to my coaching funnel. And so there are certain searches, for example, like I focus on the big five tech companies. So if you just Google Amazon salary negotiation, Apple salary negotiation, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, any of those salary negotiation, or even I think job offer, I'm the first hit. Like I outrank Google for Google job offer type stuff, right? And that goes to a page that says, here's how to negotiate your Google job offer. Here's what to expect. Here's what it looks like. Here's what they're thinking. Here's what to look out for. Here are pitfalls, and here's what you should be doing. And then, oh, by the way, at the bottom, do you want help negotiating this offer? If you do, click here and apply for my coaching. And so those leads are worth thousands of dollars and they're free. And it was really easy to generate lots of traffic. I get thousands of visitors a month to those pages. And then, you know, some of them filter through and apply. And from some of those, I work with them eventually. But that's all because I built the SEO machine for my articles and content marketing, totally agnostic of coaching. And so there are big effects there where the leads that come through those, I mean, I don't know what the dollars per lead is, but it's got to be, you know, per visitor on the page, it's probably $1, $2, something like that when I'm closing multiple $1,000 deals. And I didn't do anything different. All I did was said, this is interesting. A lot of people that come to me are apparently looking for help negotiating Amazon job offers. I'm going to write an article about that. And bam, a lot of traffic comes in and it, you know, all goes to coaching. So there are knock-on effects to SEO too, which again, going back to Facebook ads, there is no knock-on effect to a Facebook ad.
Right.
Because you don't get long-term traction from it.
Yeah, because as your site page rank or your site rank increases, anything that you put out has more clout automatically.
Right.
And if you know exactly who's, like if someone's searching for Amazon salary negotiation, you know exactly what they're looking for, right?
Yes.
And so if they go to that page, you know exactly what you're supposed to sell them on. You're not supposed to sell them on a $5 ebook. You're supposed to sell them on $1,000 coaching, because any negotiation they're able to do in that job search is monetarily just hundreds of thousands of dollars for them, right? Yep. The return on investment is huge. Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So I know that's a little side quest, but I think it's really interesting that I didn't anticipate that. I think that's the most fun thing for me about running a business is you do something and then you get a benefit later and you're like, well, I didn't anticipate that. I'd like to tell you that I set out to get lots of traffic and SEO because I thought one day I could get multiple $1,000 coaching leads out of it. But I had no idea that was going to happen.
Yeah.
It just so happens that because I focused on SEO and creating good content, so not doing black hat stuff or even gray hat stuff, but all just white hat SEO, good content, let Google know that I exist and let people find me when they need me, that later on I was able to parlay that into high dollar coaching leads.
Yeah. And I do want to move on to your funnel, but I want to mention one thing real quick that you mentioned, which was that gray hat, black hat side of stuff. And people are always asking like, oh, what's the next SEO strategy? Like, how do you rank quickly and all this stuff? It's like, the strategy never really changes. The strategy is build good content. Anytime you try to game the system in the next update, or maybe two updates or three updates down, Google's just going to bring down the hammer. And I've had so many people who tried to game the system and they lost so much traffic.
Yeah. And it takes longer to do it sort of the quote unquote right way. Right? Like you can do black hat stuff and like really spike quickly. But if you do it the right way, then you're much more durable and you get, you know, sort of longer lasting effects in your, you know, I'm always subject to the whims of Google and what they do, but I think I'm less sort of at risk for being smacked down by Google because I'm not doing anything to try and exploit Google or their algorithm. I'm just trying to create good content. And the only thing that I really pay attention to Google for is like, if I can understand more about what they consider to be good content or what they're promoting right now, or like what their best practices are, but not trying to game the system, just trying to make sure that I understand what they think is good content so that I can make sure my content at least looks like good content to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. So we've talked about the very top of the funnel, which is SEO, how you get your leads, no paid at all or none. None. All social or not social, organic, which is
organic. I spent like, I almost said I've not spent a dollar on ads. I spent, I think like $10 on Google AdWords as an experiment like 3 years ago for, it was a podcast called, man, I feel bad. It was Joe Mellon's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It was where they were just doing experiments. Like it was like, we're going to run this. It was a really cool idea. And I don't think they've shipped in a while, but it was like, they talked to me and they say, okay, here's an experiment that I think you should try that might move the needle for your business. And their experiment was try some Google AdWords. And so I did. And then I did the Google AdWords. We looked at results and I went back and talked to them about the results like a week later. And that all shipped as one episode. Super cool idea.
Interesting. That's a really cool idea.
Yes. And so it turned out that like I could get some leads through Google AdWords, but it wasn't super, the ROI just wasn't super great. And mm-hmm. so, you know, but that's literally the only time I've ever spent money on ads. And I think as part of that, we also spent like a few bucks on LinkedIn. So we did Google AdWords on LinkedIn, and it turns out that like, they're just so expensive to get people to pay attention to you that I just punted and I never messed with it. So,
especially if your SEO game is so strong, like the ads don't matter at that point, cause you're at the top anyways.
Like, yeah. I mean, I'm like, well, okay, well I could pay, you know, 50 cents or a dollar per click or something. Well, I'm going to get thousands of clicks anyway. So unless mm-hmm. I'm pointing it to a very specific thing, like if I can narrow in on a very specific high dollar, customer, on a high value page or something like that, maybe I would do it, but like, I'm going to get 100,000 clicks this month. If I don't even turn my computer on. So I don't know why I would pay 50 cents for 50 cents a click for like another 1,000 clicks or something, unless it's going to be like a huge ROI.
Right.
So
let's go on to the next step of the funnel, which is really the opt-in or as people get onto your list. So you have the two kind of segments. You have your coaching and then you have kind of the non-coaching, lower price point info product side of things. So you've segmented them either through right message or through what content they're looking at, and then how do you bring that into an opt-in and into a lead?
Okay. So yeah, you correctly identified that, like, I've never really thought about this before, but I've always thought of three segments, but it's really the top is there are two segments, either you're a coaching prospect or you're not. Once you're in the not coaching process, so the coaching prospect side is really simple. That just goes to pages that are focused on negotiating offers like at Amazon and things. And then I say, hey, click here to apply. So there's no lead magnet there. It's just an application that they fill out and I give them a call. On the other side is those three segments. Let's focus. It'll be easier, I think, if we just focus on one segment. And there's one that you and I have worked on a couple of years ago. And then also that I'm currently working on now and I've iterated since then. So maybe we'll focus on that one. And that is people who need to negotiate a job offer imminently.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would Google, the most common way that they find me is either they just Google like salary negotiation guide. Which is, I rank really high for just the term salary negotiation, which was like, that was one of my early goals. Was actually one of my first goals was Patrick McKenzie, who I talked about earlier, has a really amazing article on salary negotiation for engineers. And I was like, I want to outrank Patrick for this article for salary negotiation. So I ended up like, I managed to get to like the first page, and sometimes I'm the first result for the term salary negotiation. If you look at the other people on that page, it's like Glassdoor, Payscale, Muse, like all these huge sites, and then little old me. So they'll be Googling for things like salary negotiation email sample, how to counter offer, that kind of thing. And when they hit my site, the first thing I give them is just a really long detailed article on how to do that thing. And so the most traffic I get is to a page. This is like anybody who does SEO will know where this came from, but salary negotiation email sample is the slug on it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, people don't say that in English, but they type it into Google all the time. And so you come to the page and you see a really long detailed article. A lot of times it will have like a table of contents, and that's how long it is, which is partially for SEO, but also partially just because I know that there are people who are going to have different needs and they're moving quickly. Mm-hmm. And so once you're on that page, for example, on the salary negotiation email sample, I'll walk you through in thousands of words, like, this is how you should write that email. Here's what you need to be thinking about and all this stuff. And then there's a little opt-in that says, hey, if you want to actually get the template that I use with my clients, which is true, then give me your email address and I'll send it to you right now. And I send them a PDF. So this is, I think, really an interesting topic that could be useful for folks who are listening. The first version of that lead magnet, I believe, was actually 10 email templates that I had written. And so it was like, hey, if you like this template, get more templates. And so it would be like, there's a standard counter offer template and a lowball template for an offer that you think is like exceptionally low. And then, how to respond to a counter offer when you have other offers in hand. And it was 10 of them, right? How to decline a job offer, all that kind of stuff. And so I was giving that away. And my opt-in rates on these pages, the strong negotiation pages, were like 1%. So like 1% of visitors would opt in, which actually isn't terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible in terms of opt-in rates. You can go much lower, much higher. It's not like a homepage, so I wouldn't expect, 10%, but 1% is kind of on the low end. And so I decided one day, I was like, I think these are really valuable templates. This is really the impetus for me is I think these are so valuable. Like, I don't like that I'm giving them away. I think I should give free stuff away to an extent, but there is a point where I'm getting emails in my inbox. They're like, hey, thanks for those email templates. Got 10,000 bucks yesterday. And it's like a common occurrence. And I'm like, man, I'm just giving away a $10,000 value thing. Shouldn't I sell that? And so I was like, I'm going to run an experiment. I know this will probably cost me opt-ins. It'll get me like below 1% or whatever. Mm-hmm. But instead of giving away 10, I'm going to give away one and sell the 10. That was my experiment.
Right.
So, and I think maybe that actually the opt-in rate might've been like 2 or 3%, but I expected it to like drop in half or something. Right. Mm-hmm. So I go from 10 templates down to one. They're free. I'm pitching them on the page. There's an exit intent modal and all that good stuff. And what I found was as soon as I did that, the opt-in rate went up. It like more than doubled to like 5% plus. And I think it's because people were like, I don't want 10 templates. I want this template.
You want the singular thing that solves the problem, not a bunch of just extra stuff.
Yes. So that was, first of all, just, like I said, I'd like to believe that I'm engineering everything I do. I definitely thought, well, I'm going to get a lower opt-in rate when I give them fewer templates, but maybe some of those people who opt in will buy the templates.
Yeah.
And so I'll be able to make money on some of the people who do opt in, whereas I can't make any money on them now. And so it turns out that my opt-in rate like doubled, and 1% of the people who actually opted in would then buy the templates.
So it's a triple win.
It was the first kind of, aha moment for me, when it came to like weird business strategy stuff where I was like, that's the opposite result of what I expected. I did not see that coming. And so really my takeaway from that was I need to run more experiments. Like I need to try more crazy stuff because I thought this was going to have the opposite effect and I'd hoped I'd sell a little bit. Instead, I doubled opt-ins and also happened to be able to sell those same templates that I've given away to thousands of people for free for $50 now. Yeah. So it wasn't even like a $5, product that I was selling behind it. It was a $50 product. So that's it. So the summary is you Google, you hit my page, you read about how to do this thing. If it's negotiating a job offer or if it's specifically writing a counteroffer email, I say, hey, you're doing this. You probably could use an email template to help you with this. Give me your email address. I'll send it to you right now as a nice, well-formatted PDF. Mm-hmm. And then currently, I think that page gets 5 to 6% opt-ins.
Wow.
And that's the main page. There are other ones that get 3%, 4%. And then behind that, about 1% of those people convert to buy something from me.
And as you're saying that 5 to 6%, I mean, people also have to understand that this is organic traffic, right?
Yeah, these are like, very, so I'm not using this term disparaging, but this is a term of art. They're low quality leads, right?
Right.
Like these are people who are, they're going to read the page, they're going to skim it, they're going to see the thing they want, they're going to bounce. They're just out. They're not looking to begin any kind of a newsletter or email or business relationship with anyone. They're just looking for an answer to a question.
Yeah. It's very different than a Facebook ad where you might be wanting more like a 10 to 20% conversion rate, but that's because it's very targeted. And also you're paying $2 to $3 for each person coming in. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Two things I want to mention there that I think really tie into that is one, we do a lot of split tests and we always try to get our clients and everyone we talk to always throw in a crazy split test. Mm-hmm. And the clients are always like, no, it's not on brand. No, it's not going to work. It's like, that's the point. The point is to get out of your comfort zone and find something that doesn't work. Just like you were doing. It's like, let's try. Like the assumption is leads are going to go down. Maybe we'll get some conversions on the sales side, et cetera, et cetera. But you had the opposite result, right? Because you don't know what's going to happen until you test it. If you just went on what you think is going to happen, the company's never going to change. Your marketing's never going to change because your ideas are not going to change unless you're trying something new.
Yep. So it's really interesting that you say that because I think I'm really early on this, but I think this is kind of going to be what my next book is about. So I think, I'm an engineer and I know that you come from a similar background. We tackle problems in a very technical way. And I used to play a lot of poker. And so I'm much more risk seeking than like the typical person would be. Mm-hmm. And so what you're kind of describing is like the really early stage kind of small business version of the innovator's dilemma, where it's like, well, I know this is working. I just want to do it better. Where the answer might often be, I know this is working, but what if that's not even the best thing to do? This other thing is the better thing to do. And sometimes you don't sort of tweak and innovate your way forward on one idea. You have to jump off the track and switch tracks and jump on another track. And that's when you find the hockey stick. And so that was the first time when I switched from like the 10 free to the one free templates. I mean, my opt-ins just overnight. There's a stair step. Like if you look in Google at opt-in rates, boop. It literally is a stair step function where it's like, boop, just the whole site just doubles overnight. Like I'm doing nothing, same number of visitors, twice the email opt-ins, right? And so that seems like a crazy idea. It seems like I'm giving them less. Why would that happen? I did not anticipate the result, but just the fact that I tried it. So now I actually have to like pull in the reins on myself because I'm constantly wanting to do crazy stuff. And I'm like, no, only one crazy thing at a time. Because, you know, you can obviously, if you're trying 8 crazy things at a time, first of all, you can't measure results very well. But second of all, like you could cause like real damage to your business. And so you want to like you said, like if you're doing an A-B split test, maybe add a C for crazy.
Right. Exactly. You have your control, you have two solid options, and then you have the crazy option.
Yeah. But I think everyone should be doing that, especially when you're early and especially when you're sort of a small business. Most of the time, the reason you're able to create the business that you're creating is that you're doing something different, or you're doing the same thing other people are doing in a different way. And so there is no roadmap. For me, the most challenging thing about this business, and you and I, gosh, I mean, how many hours did you and I talk about this early on? There was no roadmap for me to follow. I didn't know what I was doing. And so I would talk to you, or I would talk to other smart people and say, help me think about this funnel or this sales page or what I need to pitch to people, because I can't go look at another business. There isn't another person. Right. You know, Ramit is maybe the closest thing to what I'm doing. And like the salary negotiation stuff for him is a side hustle thing.
Yeah.
It's not his primary business. And so I could look at what Ramit was doing, and I did learn some things about what Ramit was doing, but I can't copy Ramit. I wouldn't want to, but even if I wanted to, I can't.
He already got that. Right. He's already there. He's owning that space.
And so I have to figure out like, how do I do my own thing in my own space where there is nobody to follow? And I think really it's important early on to take risks and to set yourself up to be able to take those risks. So that's the important thing for me is I mess with my coaching pricing sometimes, and that's caused some dry spells where I don't have any coaching coming in. It's okay because I make sure that I set some of my profit aside. I've got a buffer in the bank. And so that makes me much more anxious to just try random stuff. What happens if I change my entire pricing model? What if I give away one instead of 10? What's going to happen? And the answer is, I don't know. It could cost me money, but that's okay. I've got money in the bank and I'll just burn that money. And I can always just hit reset if it doesn't work.
Right. And I think that that's important as well, which is to make sure, and I think you and I have both read Profit First, but to have that buffer there to be able to say, okay, I don't know if this is going to work or not, but I can try it because it's not going to bankrupt the company. And it's the same, you know, back when I was doing consulting, when I was having those dry spells, I always thought, oh man, I got to take in any client that comes in the door because I need this money. I need to make that 60K, 80K payroll every month so that all my employees are paid. And it forces you to make bad decisions and to be able to go and have that freedom to experiment a little bit more and know that it's not going to bankrupt you is, I think, really important.
Yep. Yeah. So I haven't read Profit First, but I've read a lot of people who've read Profit First and a lot of my friends. And
read the book at that point.
I mean, the reason I haven't read it is people describe what they're doing. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much what I do. I think it's because I've taken ideas from different people. Actually, I mentioned Brennan earlier. Like, I think the way that I do my bookkeeping and my sort of slicing off money for taxes and profit and stuff, that came from what I knew Brennan happened to do. But there are a lot of other people I know who've read the book, and when they describe it, I'm like, you should do that. Also, I want to give credit to somebody. So Robert Williams at Folio, I don't know if you know Robert, but he was also instrumental in when I went from 10 to 1 and then started selling those email templates. He helped me a lot with making that transition and also just kind of like putting my head down and knocking through the wall. So I just want to give him credit. He was an advisor on that, and he directly helped me create that funnel and create that product, which is like, it's either my best-selling or second best-selling product. So anyway, just credit to Robert Williams over at Folio for
his help. And we'll put that in the show notes because Robert is effing amazing, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic. I love if you should check his stuff out just to see his unique, minimalist, really great design and copywriting. I love looking at his stuff because you look at it and you're like, man, this is so simple and so good. You don't have to do solid. Flashy. It's great. He's really good at that stuff.
Yeah. One other thing I want to talk about real quick with the bonuses is that I saw this a couple of times with people we've worked with where they keep adding more and more bonuses into the products they're selling and conversion rate went down. Mm-hmm. And no one could understand why until we started getting support requests. It's like, we actually got a couple support requests. It's like, hey, do I have to get these bonuses? Because I really don't want them.
Where am I going to put them all?
Right. Where am I going to put them all? And B, I'm trying to go through this first course or this first PDF or whatever. And then I'm overwhelmed because I got these 800 other things that I'm going to be getting emails about as well. And it's like, I have all this stuff now that I have to go through. I'm overwhelmed. It's Paradox of Choice, if you've read that book, is the same thing. You have so much stuff just overwhelming you that you just shut down and say, nope, I'm just going to stop right there. Where if it's a single thing that's like, hey, get this, you're like, it's an easy decision to make.
So now, okay, I've been tooting my own horn a little bit, I feel like, and so now I'm going to have a little confession time with you. So,
all right.
I've gotten pretty good SEO. I get good opt-ins, a lot of email opt-ins. I can sell to like a non-trivial number of those people in one of my funnels. It's not amazing, but there is money coming in. On the other side is what my book, Fearless Salary Negotiation. So you can buy the paperback on Amazon. It's $50. It's priced high to reflect the premium value of the product. And also just to make people kind of go, who's this guy think he is? Because I want them to. And then you can also buy my eBooks and stuff like that from my site. So there's a page, sales page for that. You've helped me with the sales page in the past. And it does pretty good. And there are currently two tiers offered. There's my basic bundle, which is like, it's the book. And in the book, I also created like spreadsheets that you can use to help you do calculations and estimate your market value. Like we talked about earlier, email templates that come with the way. It's the book plus accompanying materials, $50. Ebook bundle. And then there's the complete bundle. So the complete bundle started as that plus three meaty video courses on the main concepts in the book that happen to reflect the three funnels I mentioned to you, which are interviewing, negotiating new offer, trying to get a raise, and then some supplementary courses on how to estimate your market value and stuff like that. So that was the complete bundle. So it was like $49 for that. And then I think I chose $239, which is like a dumb price that needs to be fixed. But anyway, for the complete bundle. Okay. So, and then like I created another thing, like some more email templates. I was like, oh, I'll toss those email templates in there. And then I was like, you know what? I had this book on how to write business email that's pretty good. And most of these people are professionals. They probably want to write a video. I'll throw that in there too. Mm-hmm. And then there was like, and then all of a sudden now I'm working with Alex Hillman on some stuff right now. And he was like, so you just turned this into like just a, like a grab bag of stuff that you've done. It's like all your stuff ever. So it's not a complete bundle of Fearless Salary Negotiation. It's like just a complete, like Josh's career stuff. And so I think that it's probably converting poorly. And would convert better. One, if I just picked a non-stupid price, $239 is just a bad price point. But two, if it was, even if the stuff is in there and I put it as bonuses, then I don't mention them or something. Or if I just trimmed the fat and said, here's what you get is these five core things. Here's what they do for you. I think it would probably do better. And so that's, like you said, because I think a lot of people probably look at it and they scratch it and they go, well, I would like to know how to do X, but I don't really care about all this other stuff and I don't want to pay for that. So that's one problem when you put on a bonus. They know I'm paying for those bonuses, whether I want to or not, right?
Right.
It's part of the package that I'm buying. And so in a way, I think that all the extra stuff that you throw in waters it down. And so I need to, I don't know what to do about that, but like it's on my list of like, I need to fix that and make the complete bundle more of a complete bundle of my book rather than a complete set of just stuff that Josh has done. It's all super valuable. That's what's frustrating to me is I want to give it to people. It's really valuable stuff, but I think
it's good for a cross sell.
It's good for a cross sell, but also it's like, I think one thing you can give people is focus. You can give them, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to focus on. And I do not give that to them when they buy the complete bundle. I give them stuff instead.
Yeah. And those bundles, I think it's important to have anything you include with a product, especially a paid product, be a level up, something that levels people up and makes it easier to accomplish the goal and not just like turn it into a grab bag. Because when you're looking at a grab bag, what you're saying is, just like you said, you're still paying for this. You're paying extra money in order to have these things that you might not want. But you have to make those extras and those bonuses really take the core product. And you know, we always talked about bonuses and tiered pricing should make people accomplish things faster or accomplish things better. Right. So one of those two things. So either it's checklists or things that, or like Nathan Berry had a good one for his, I don't remember what it's called anymore. I think it was Designing Apps, where you got the ebook.
And yeah, like the App Design Handbook or something like that.
App Design Handbook, where the ebook was the main one. And then the second level was actually the templates that he used in Photoshop or whatever it was.
Yep.
And it's like, this is how you get there faster, right? Yep. Now you're not reading a book and having to do it. It's like, here's the actual templates and the sketch files and all that that you can use. And then the last one was like videos of him actually building it out in real time. And all of these things level up that initial product. It's not this grab bag of, oh, here's my book on authority, right?
Yeah.
Or here's my other book that's tangentially related. Every bonus here that you're paying for whether or not, because as sellers, we think bonus is free. No, people see that you're paying for these bonuses.
Yeah.
If they're leveling you up, then people want them. If they're not, then people have to make a decision about whether it's worth it or not.
Which, I mean, now that I think about it, like when I made the complete bundle of Fearless Salary Negotiation, my idea with the video courses was like twofold. One was everybody's doing tiers on their info products right now, and I got to do that. That was, I mean, that's
what you do. Yeah. Tiers are great.
Yeah. And the second one was, okay, but how can I augment a book that you would read to be a thing that people might get more value from or learn faster? And so that's why I said, well, instead of reading this chapter, I'm going to create an hour-long course of like 8 lessons that shows you what I'm doing in the chapter. And there is visual stuff happening on the screen. So it does augment the book. It says you read the book, but I learned personally, and speaking for Josh now, like I learn visually. So like when I see the thing and I hear somebody talking about the thing, I learn a lot more than I do just reading stuff on a page. And so, you know, if I'm giving you worksheets or email templates, I can show you, this is what I'm doing on this worksheet. Yeah. This is my philosophy. And you can see it in just, it's just Keynote, but it's better. Whereas when I start piling the other stuff in, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm no longer augmenting the core product. I'm adding other, you know, ancillary things to it that might be good or are even valuable, but maybe not to that person at that time. And they don't make the core product better.
Right. And things that, I mean, one example of something you could use to level it up would be something like a mock interview, where you've pre-recorded interview questions and you're sitting there behind the desk and you're like, play this video, and it plays. And then you have then they have to do a response. And it's like, okay, here's what you, how you should have responded. And like that practice, right? That's something that gives people a chance to level themselves up and is core and is part of that core product.
Yes. Right. As opposed to like a book on, like you said, like Nathan Barry throwing Authority in. He didn't do that. Authority is a great book. Or me throwing my Mastering Business email book in there. Like, that's a nice thing, but it's not going to help you get better at interviews. If anything, it's a distraction, right? You know, you probably shouldn't take time to look at that right now. And so now I'm giving you things and I'm forcing you to make a choice about, should I, Josh just gave me this because he sold me some stuff. Like, should I read this book right now? And my answer would be no, don't read that right now. Which means maybe I shouldn't give it to them, or maybe I should send it later or something like that.
And this is something you can do with the automation funnels, where you know that it takes people a month or 6 weeks or 2 months to go through the initial product. And then afterwards, you just send them something. It's like, hey, how'd that all go? By the way, I want to give you this free copy of my Mastering Business book.
Yep.
Right. So you can still have it and still garner goodwill. And I think that, and the research that we've done has shown that a bonus that you have not announced and comes in later is so much more valuable and makes people so much happier than a bonus that they had to decide at the beginning if they were paying for or not.
Yep. Totally agree.
Awesome. So I do want to be conscious of our time, but is there any other part of the funnel that you kind of want to discuss that you're like, this was freaking awesome that we found out, or anything like that?
Yeah. So again, yes, the answer is yes. And there's a qualifier here, which is, remember that the funnel that I'm describing is designed for people who are in a very serious time crunch. So right. I'm solving a thing called the timing problem, and that I call the timing problem, which is, you know, there's a bigger difference between what I'm describing and maybe somebody who wants to learn how to play the piano, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're expecting it's going to be months and you have to nurture them for a long time. Whereas what I'm doing is I'm saying, hey, you came to me for help with this. Let me help you right now. So one thing that I do is, first of all, I went down to one email template. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people are scrambling and they just want the one thing. What's the one thing that I can do right now to not screw this up?
Mm-hmm.
And so they get the email template. Then on the thank you page, and this was your idea, I'm almost positive. So I redirect them. I say, hey, thanks for giving me your email. That template's on the way. It'll be there 5 or 10 minutes, which just sort of buys me time to let ConvertKit do its thing and kick the email over to them. So it doesn't, you know, so they don't, they might expect it to show up right away. And sometimes it's not going to, because you know, the internet tubes are full or whatever. So, and so what I do on the thank you page is I say, hey, and then I pitch them on something. I say, you're obviously negotiating an offer. And then, you know, this is what I've been working on with Alex Hillman lately, is making this a better pitch. But I do tell them about a product with a buy button on the thank you page. And it does two things. One is, occasionally that's going to convert. I don't actually expect it to convert. I expect it to just put a little blink in their brain that says, hey, I can actually pay money to get more help with this. And so what I do is I always over index on quality. So anything that you get from me, I want you to go, wow, this is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you get that email template 5 minutes later, there's going to be a reminder, another link to buy the salary negotiation crash course is at the bottom of that email with a free email template. And so I want you to open the template and go, man, this is pretty good. And yes, Josh gave me a template to counter offer, but what happens next? And so that's what I'm emphasizing to them is like, listen, this is the first step in negotiating. You need to send this counter offer template, but there's other stuff that you don't know that's coming. And I'm going to tell you about that in follow-up emails over the next few days, or you could just buy the salary negotiation crash course. And so I think the thank you page is key. I think this is something that I'm thinking more about, and it's a place where I think there's a lot of people leaving value on the table, either pitching a product, or if you're on a slower burn, like a longer timeline funnel, putting some kind of a survey on that page or getting some kind of feedback. What are you looking for? How can I help you? You know, whatever it is to get better stuff in front of them, to segment them, or just to learn more about what people are looking for when they come there, I think it's really important. As opposed to like, thanks, check your inbox, and there's nothing on the page. I think that's a wasted page.
It's such a wasted page. And everything, and I think we did talk about this, because this is a strategy that I found working, God, for the last 9 years, which is on that thank you page, always give them something to do. And we've had a number of clients that have a sale on there, and consistently 2% uptake on that sale for a small product, like sub $57 product. We see a 2% across every niche, across every industry, across every offer. It's amazing the pickup we get on these things.
Yeah. So you can sell there, or you can survey. You should do something on your thank you page. You should redirect them. I started redirecting to thank you pages because it's the easiest way for me to track goal completions in Google Analytics, which is the primary kind of top of funnel thing that I use. But it turns out like also that's another touch point for you to say, hey, you gave me your email address. The thing is on its way. Now let me tell you about this, or ask you about this, or why don't you tell me about what you need? Or here's a video of just a thing that's going to be really helpful to you right now, or whatever it is. Give them something, like you said, give them something to do, to learn more, or to purchase a better version of the thing or whatever. So that's the first thing that happens when you opt in. And then I begin sending, first of all, I send them the free thing. And then I send a nurture sequence, which is kind of the next phase for me to work on. But that nurture sequence is basically like, I know that there are 5 or 6 key things that people need to know to negotiate offers. And so I try to educate them on those things. So like the first thing is like, what's your walkaway number? Which is kind of going back to you and I talked about understanding your market value as a baseline. And so your walkaway number should be before you get the offer. Like, what do you think is the number that you will not accept for? Right. Mm-hmm. Which for most people is like, they go, oh, I didn't even know I should really think about that. I thought it was just a go, no go kind of thing. And I'm saying, no, you can quantify this. Like, what is the number? And so I educate them that way. And then of course, at the end of each email is like, hey, if you want to know how to use your walkaway number to actually negotiate tactically, salary negotiation crash course. And so I just keep reminding them that over like the week after that. So that's pretty much that whole funnel. And then they fall into like my kind of normal, you know, here are my best articles. And then here's my weekly newsletter funnel. But that funnel that we go through is pretty much what I describe, which is Google, read the article, free email template, see the product that I'm pitching on the thank you page, get the free email template in your email, in your inbox, and then get valuable lessons over the next 7 days, but also just a quick, you know, one paragraph pitch with a link to say, if you want to level up, if you want to do this faster, if you want to learn what I know, salary negotiation crash course.
Yep. And that goes back to what we were talking about, where everything should level up from where they are, right? Because those are the things that are going to convert people, is you find out what their main pain point is and then set that to level up. I do want to talk about one thing real quick before I let you go, because I always found this interesting. You said that, you know, people are very time conscious at this point, right? They need to solve this problem right now. And your original funnel was, I think, 14 days?
Yeah, it was a long time.
And what was kind of the switch in your head that went off that's like, oh, wait a minute, why am I making people wait 14 days before I sell them on a product?
Yeah. So that, it was 14 days and I really wasn't even pitching. Like I was one of the, I'm a classic, like I didn't know what I was doing when I started. So I was selling info products. I was very timid about it. Right. So like, oh, I need to make sure like I build a rapport with this person and like build a relationship with them before I tell them. And it's like, well, no, that's not how that works. First of all, I already gave them something valuable. But second of all, like there's just not time for that. And so I talked to Brennan Dunn one day, back to Brennan, and he's the first person who said, oh, I think you just need a shorter funnel here. And so, you know, he helped me understand and so actually I talked to Brennan, he helped me realize there was a shorter funnel. I started actually surveying people and saying, when are you negotiating your offer? And the answer that I got back on, like, it's like somewhere between 60 and 80% of the people, it was like now, like, and so what I realized was I literally had a window that was hours wide to pitch them on something and show them value and sell them a thing. And then the other people might still be around later, But that was the trigger for me, as Brennan said, this needs to be a shorter funnel because they have an imminent need right now. There is no time for a 2-week nurture sequence. They do not need it. And then what I was actually pitching them also was the product was my book, which if somebody has a job offer in their hand right now, the least useful thing in the universe for them is a 2-week nurture sequence followed by a pitch for a book. Right. They don't want to read a book. Even if I pitch them the book the second they meet me, they don't want to read a book. They're not like, I want to get educated.
They have an interview tomorrow.
And yeah, I need to do this thing right now. Like somebody is waiting on me to respond to a job offer now. And I don't know what to do, but I know I should do something. And so that's where Brennan was like, I think that you need to relook at this. It's got to be a shorter funnel. And I think you need to sell them something that's actually aligned to helping them what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. And so that was the real trigger. And so that's where I said, 10 free down to 1 free template. I'll sell them the 10 templates. And then now I've transitioned from sell them the 10 templates to I'm just going to bundle that all into the salary negotiation crash course, which existed anyway. And I'm going to sell them a course on how to negotiate this job offer that you're dealing with right now. And so that's kind of where I am now. And what I found very early on, that it looks like conversion rates to sales for here's a free email template up to 10 email templates, very similar to conversion from here's a free email template to here's a course on how to do this with all those other email templates. Wow. The difference is the price is twice as much.
Right.
So now I'm offering a $97 product with a bigger upsell behind it. And the opt-in rate seems to be very similar. I don't have enough data yet to say for sure, mm-hmm. but I think it's still going to be around 1% of people who opt in will buy this thing.
That's mind blowing.
So it was Brendan that kind of nudged me to think about that. And then Robert Williams at Folio is the person who kind of helped me create that funnel, decide what to sell them in the nick of time. And then I rolled that out like April of 2018. And it was, like I said, my second best-selling product last year. Just money, because remember, I basically wasn't converting any of those people before.
Right.
Because by the time I tried to sell them, they had already finished negotiating and probably had started at their new job. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, hey, remember when you were negotiating a couple of weeks ago? I wrote a book about that. You want to buy it? And they're like, yeah, I'm good.
No. Yeah. You know? It's like, this is, what was it, the Adam Sandler? This is information that would have been useful yesterday.
Like, yes. Yeah. Except mine wasn't even that good. It was like 2 weeks ago. I could have helped you. I really could have offered you a lot of value.
You could be making $50,000 more if you had a time machine.
You and I together really screwed this up. Let me show you how much. You should read this book so you know how much money you left on the table 2 weeks ago when I could have helped you, but I chose not to. Yeah. That's pretty much what's going on.
Wow. All right, Josh, thank you so much for talking through this funnel and talking about the way that the thought process behind all this. I find it just absolutely just interesting and amazing, just where all the ideas come from and how a lot of them are just chance that you're like, oh, look at that, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Be open to chance. Embrace chance, right? Talk to smart people who have a lot of smart ideas or good ideas, and then just let them bounce around. And sometimes something will tumble out and you'd be like, you know what? Let me just take a shot and see what happens.
Yeah. So where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. So the place that I engage with people the most freely is on Twitter. So I'm Josh Duty on Twitter. And I'm on there all the time. I'm super quick to respond. And you can also find me at fearlesssalarynegotiation.com. So on the homepage there, you'll find all kinds of pointers to resources and things. So those are the two places that you should focus. And if you're interested in the coaching offering, which Keith, you and I didn't talk about, but if you want to see what I'm doing there, or, you know, if you're somebody that I could help negotiate a job offer from a big tech company, that's fearlesssalarynegotiation.com/coach.
Yeah. And we'll link all that in the show notes. Awesome. Josh, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Keith. It was good to be here.
All right. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. I thought this was going to be a fun one. I was excited about it.
I was too. Like, it's interesting because I know your funnel from back in the day. And it's like, I wonder how it's changed. Like, because I see the snippets come through in the Slack chat and everything. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I want to know more.
It's really similar to what you and I talked about a few years ago. And like, you know, it's marginal changes that have been made. But you know, I remember a few years ago, you gave me sort of a layout for the page, and then I never did my due diligence on like copywriting for that page. And so now that I'm working with Alex, I think the copy on the salary negotiation crash course page is like, it's very good.
It's all.
And so we're going to see, you know, how it converts over time. And he wants to rework the email sequence itself. I think he thinks I'm giving away too much tactical stuff and not enough, fix kind of stuff, and pain dream fix. So we're going to look at A/B testing that. But the funnel itself is probably really close to what you and I talked about. And it's just been sort of tweaked over time where I run these experiments and I kind of double down on this one thing. Yeah. You know, and so there's still a lot of ideas that you gave me a while back that I'd like to do, like quizzes, I think are probably still something I should be doing. And
the $2 lead one, lead one I was talking about, that was a quiz. I'm like, it's just, it's so good. Like,
yeah. So, and there are lots of, you know, I mean, there's a ton of ways that instead of saying like, what's your income? How many jobs have you had when you're negotiating your offer? I could flip it around and give them a quiz about like scenario. Like if this, if they say this to you, you're going to A, B, C, or D, they answer and I say, here's what you should do instead. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I think I could do around quick user education and pitching. Yeah. I think the SEO part is really key because I get so much traffic that I can just run random tests. Like I get data immediately. Like I'm going to get 3,000 visitors or 4,000 visitors today. And so I can run a test for 4 days and say fail.
That's awesome.
And so that was, it took a long time to get going. I think it slowed me down at the beginning, but now I have this machine where I can test stuff, you know, in 1 or 2 days and know if it's good or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. There's one thing I wanted to ask and I'm trying to remember what it was, but now I'm completely blanking. Oh, well, it was something about ConvertKit. Nah. Oh, well, I'm gone.
No, you know where to find me if it comes to you.
Yeah. What microphone mic boom is that? Because I got tired of holding this thing after like 20 minutes.
Let me see if I can find it. I'm like 98% sure I bought it on Amazon. And I'm hoping that if I just quickly look at my order history, let's see if I search for the word boom. Yep, there it is. Yep. Here's a link for you.
Awesome. Cool. All right.
$13.
What?
That's what I'm saying. It's super cheap. So there's no shock mount or anything on there, but it's what I'm, I'm using that with the exception of this, the ATR has its own little, this thing here, whatever this is that like you have to replace. But it should just swap over.
Got it. Okay.
You probably already have that part, but other than that, and it's great because it like, you can see at the bottom of that thing, it just screws into my desk. So when I'm done talking to you, I'm just going to unscrew this from my desk. I'm going to unplug the USB thing. I'm just going to put it in my closet.
Oh, one quick thing. Did you know that you can plug the headphones into this thing?
No.
Yeah. So you can plug the headphone in and because it's USB, it I'm actually listening to you through that.
Oh.
Yeah, it's super nice.
I'm plugged directly into my, you know, just the mic jack on the laptop.
Okay. Yeah, so not sure if it helps in your setup, but because mine is a desktop and so far away, like this is super useful.
Well, it's pushing. I mean, you know, you can see like I'm at the max length. So if I need to like back up at all, I like immediately.
Go strangle yourself with that.
Yes. Yeah. So I need to try that. I don't know why. I think I knew that when I bought it, but I kind of forgot. So that's a good tip. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Hoss. Well, thank you so much again. And I'll give you a ping when it goes live. Probably we got one more before we're launching. So it'll probably be in about 2 weeks that we'll get this thing out.
Okay. And you're doing like, you're going to launch with like 5 episodes or something like that. Is that what you're doing?
3, but yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let me know when it's out. And if you're tweeting and stuff, I'll be retweeting and you know,
sounds good.
I might even, this is one that I might even just send it to my email list. I like to send them stuff that's not like hardcore salary negotiation tactical stuff sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, every now and then I'm like, hey, this is what it's like for me to run my business so they get to know me better. So I might do that.
That's what I wanted to mention. So that's actually the reason I started this whole thing because I want to promote Psychmetrics, but I hate self-promotion.
Yeah.
And DataBeat's opinion, this whole podcast thing is a great way for, it gives me something to promote that's not me. It's like, because I'm promoting other people and I love doing that. But I'm not going to like say, oh, you should buy Psychmetrics, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're, this is exactly what you should do is just give people a resource to figure out how to parse data. And then eventually they'll say, well, how do I get good data to parse?
Exactly.
Well, I can do that for you.
Yeah. All right, Haas. Thanks so much, man.
All right. Yeah. Keith, nice talking to you.
Definitely. Talk soon. Bye.